Blog Talk Radio. Hello and welcome to Awakenings, part of the Converging Flow. I'm your host and co-pilot, Michelle Mache. Welcome everyone in the chat. Welcome everyone listening via Cosmic Dimensions. And welcome everyone listening later in the archives and via iTunes. That little bit of music was called Happiness by DJ Petey from Moontribe.org. Great musician and DJ. I thought it was apropos, as we will be chatting later. Our guest is the author of Happiness. Really looking forward to the Happiness Genes. So really looking forward to talking to him about, is there a gene for happiness? And if there's not, how do you create it in your mind, right? If you have just tuned in or surfed into Awakenings, I want to tell you a little bit about it. Awakenings is a place for conscious living. This is where we highlight conscious living for conscious lives. We really focus here on dialogues, interviews, really more of a dialogue and discussions about living consciously, living awake, living aware, and also chronicling the stages of awakening, the individual and the collective shift, and how that's affecting everyone individually as well as collectively. So whether you're an author, you know, writer, teacher, you know, it doesn't matter, student, visionary, a progressive thinker, someone that's really feels that you've really awakened and are taking that awakened state in your everyday lives. Not only is this a great place for you for resources, but also even to be on the program. Sometimes we also do awakened panels as well, where we have panel discussions. So it really is a place to chronicle this and to support each other, to share and support each other in this unfoldment of awakening and allowing more consciousness, more information. So you can get a lot of wonderful information here as well. So we believe in, you know, sharing the insights, inspiration, tools, also the tools for spiritual integration, self-development, spiritual unfoldment. And so we do tend to have a lot of dialogues with spiritual teachers, healers, and conscious beings in this form, and artists too, because the awakening state of consciousness, becoming more conscious, more awake, more aware, doesn't just happen in a book. It happens through movies, happens in all forms. It happens in fashion, it happens in new thought, it happens in ideas, it happens in the way people relate, it happens in innovation, creativity, it happens in technology, it happens in new uses for computers, new types of computers. So it really is this zeitgeist moment in time where there is this converging. And I look at it in a sense like a star, you know, or people coming from all walks of life. You can just see the converging. It doesn't matter, are they in politics, or it doesn't matter if they're in music or art, or they teach yoga, or they work in construction, or they're a builder or an architect or a designer, you know, a writer, a teacher, you know, secretary, an exec, you know, a forest ranger. It's that seed of that consciousness, that awareness. It's like a little alarm goes off, but it's a wonderful alarm. It's an aha alarm. For some people, it's like a whoop. It's like a you know, it's like a slap. Some people, it's like, wow, things are different, or wow, I want to live more fulfilled. I want to do something with my life. I've always wanted to do such and such, and I'm going back to this, or there's more to this. There must be more. Those are some of the things, that's some of the ways that the soul impressions come to us, and we become more spirit-led. There must be something more. I want something more. I want more fulfillment. I'd like to do this. I feel like I want to do this. Not out of emotions or emotionalism, but feeling. And when we start attuning to that feeling nature that we are, that part of us, it begins to guide us if we allow it. It's like a tuning fork to align us to the right frequency or the right pitch. It's also, I call it the inner GPS. And it comes from within. Even if we get inspired by something outside of us, you know, a person, a book, a magazine, a play, a workshop, a show, a billboard, something someone said, it still triggers something within us. And it's that part within us that's where the awakening occurs. Something within us registers that message, that signal. And in that registering of that message, that signal, a new direction begins to happen. Now, what's interesting is, because I had a question on this earlier today, actually, is it the signal? It's actually, there's already, energetically, there's already been a shift. I mean, how many of you sometimes when you are making changes or going in a different direction, look back and you go, either I always wanted to do this or I knew something was happening. I knew something new was coming. I knew there was a change. You know, I knew I was meant to go in this direction. I could feel it. You know, I could feel something new coming in. I could feel this, you know, ending. So really, we are spoken to so much through our feeling nature, our feeling tone. You know, if something is giving us joy. And, you know, and I had somebody say, well, we can't like what we do all the time, or we can't be happy all the time. No. You know, because we have that human existence of the wheel of fortune, it turns around. But, you know, there is that saying that it's not so much that what happens to us, it's what we do about what happens to us and how we feel about what happens to us. And some of what I'm suggesting is just not to be what I call married to a certain state or marinating in this state. Sometimes we get, you know, hung up on a difficult passage in our life. You know, one of the afflictions of the mind in the Buddhist philosophy is suffering over one's suffering. So, yes, there's going to be times that things are difficult, you know, or challenging or awful, tragedy. But do we suffer over it? Do we lament and marinate in it, you know, for months, years on end? Or, you know, so there is something to that, you know, those afflictions of mind, suffering over one's suffering, over attachment. You know, part of our path is to be bond and feel connection and love, but not be over attached, not grasping. Also, illusion or delusion. Are we living in illusion? Are we deluding ourselves? Or are we putting really energy and getting assistance and support for what the dreams that we do want to manifest? Well, sometimes it's easier to wallow in stuff. You know, I've seen that sometimes with people. And I've been there myself, too. You know, you ask for help, and then you get the help, but because it doesn't come in the way that you think it should or you were looking for it, very often people tune out the advice. I've even seen that people getting readings on the program. And I can see that what the guest is delivering, or sometimes even myself has delivered, is exactly what that person needs to do. But sometimes it's easier to let the fear hold us back and just keep talking about what we want to do or how we're not able to do it. Because that's a form of creation, too. It might not be a higher, expanded level of a creation, but our worry is a creation of our own mind, right? So we want to be aware of that. Anytime we're worrying too much or ruminating and stuff, then that is really a call to action. In other words, there is a part of us that's trying to come through saying, you can do something about this. You can get support, especially right now with the net. You know, there's just so much out there. You know, programs like this, there's other programs. A lot of times people post, you know, helpful tools or information or insights on the website. I know I do. You know, I'll give that to you. There's selfandlight.com. Wonderful tools there. So there really is no kind of excuse anymore. It's not like things are few and far between or you have to buy a book to get the information. A lot of times there's excerpts of the book, you know, or books are quite reasonable now, especially even on Amazon. Light is saying suffering can become a vicious cycle from the chat. She's saying conditions with chronic pain can create a depression. Then depression intensifies the pain, creating more depression until you can let it go. Absolutely, absolutely. I totally know that. I've been there. Understand that. And sometimes you just, with that, though, you have to just be with that. It's a kind of a quiet calm or acceptance. So even though, you know, there's a wonderful affirmative passage or phrase, even though I'm going through this, I love and accept myself. You know, even though I'm depressed and I'm not doing all that I want to do, I love and accept myself. So sometimes accepting the condition we find ourselves in is exactly the key to freeing us. So when we're too caught in the resistance of it, you know, anybody gone through childbirth knows this. You breathe with the pain. You go through those contractions. It's the same in everyday living. You breathe through the pain, the contraction. You breathe through the limitation. You know, that old saying or adage from the Bible, this too shall pass. You know, actually every great religion has that. And even more esoteric religions have that there is a cycle that this shall pass. And it doesn't always mean that we're doing something wrong. It's just that happens to be the passage. So being aware of that not to suffer over our suffering, or, you know, allow that human condition, allow that experience, that expression, but is there ways to move through it? Talking about it, journaling, writing, drawing, painting, dancing, movement, even if you can only move your eyebrows, or sitting with someone, letting someone hold that sacred space with you for what you're going through. And Revel is saying in the chat, no feeling is final. Very well put. Very well put. And so we want to be aware of whether it's suffering over one's suffering or also an aversion to things. Do we hate things and only like certain things? Really that middle way of peace, calm, of tolerance brings us not only compassion for ourselves but for others as well. And then releasing attachment, not being over-attached. Another way to free ourselves from those binds. Because again, it's not so much what's happening to us, it's how do we respond to what's happening to us. That begins to be the key in so many ways. And then Light also in the chat room was saying happiness is holding a magnifying glass over all that is good in your life and letting go quickly of anything negative and acceptance of what is living in the moment. I would agree that acceptance, I think, is a very, very, very big part. And Light is also saying we choose to be the victim or victor. Yes, you know, everyone's going to have something done to them. You're going to stop at the step of victim, you know, as one of the archetypal energies that we experience on the planet. But again, how long do you stay there? Does it become a chronic state? That's what we're talking about. Because a chronic state is like rust, right? It's like rust. So we don't want those rusty parts. We want to stay flexible in body and in mind. Also want to remind everyone we're doing our who and how and where you listen to Awakenings, our non-competitive competition. How's that? So you can email at awakenings@selfandlight.com and let me know how and where you listen to Awakenings. And we'll be wrapping up on that. Oh, beginning of May, so rounding here. And then also on Facebook, you can let us know or connect on the Awakenings radio page. And it's a good way to keep in touch as well. So, happiness. What I'm really excited to talk to our guests about this to get insight, because I think there's a misnomer as to what exactly is you know, happiness, and everybody wants to know, how do you get happiness, right? So we're going to be talking with the co-author, James Beard, who has actually 40 years of experience as a successful inventor and graduate engineer. His inventor background instilled in him a persistent curiosity about how things work, translating from mechanisms to life. His passion for understanding the bioengineering that makes us human, combined with his spiritual beliefs, has led us to this study of happiness for more than 20 years. And he's here on Awakenings Radio to share his findings with us and to talk a bit about his book as well. Welcome to the program, Dr. Baird.
Well, thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Oh, yes. We're happy you're here as well.
Of course.
And in fact, at the top of the program, I played a song that's actually titled Happiness. So we are in sync. Yeah, we are in sync. We're in alignment with that. What led you first? I know you've done a lot of studying, and your own personal beliefs led you on this journey. But why happiness? What was the, you know, the question there, or the wonderment about happiness?
Well, it started out a fairly long time ago. I took on to the great American lie is that if you very successful in business and do very well, you became wealthy and then you'll be happy. And then I worked most of my life to try and prove that out, and finally got to that point and found out that money didn't make me happy. In fact, not at all. So I started doing some research, and the conclusion I came to is that there are two kinds of happiness, that basically, the one is the generic form, or the common form that most people think is happy, has to do with external conditions, always. It can be pleasure, it can be a satisfaction or feeling of well-being, but it always has to do with some external conditions. And when they go away, and they do go away, because things change, as you well know, frequently, so does your happiness. So then I found that there is another kind of happiness, and I noted that whenever I did something spiritual, such as do a good deed for somebody or an act of compassion, I always felt very happy about it. I always felt good about it. And when I talked to other people, I found out that that was universal. And not only was it universal, it had nothing to do with conditions. It's all inside, not outside. So I wondered, why is that? And after a while, I began to have the insight that we must have some genes that make us spiritual. We're a spiritual people, and that can be pretty well demonstrated by going back through history and looking at artifacts and other things that are left around from ancient cultures. So my initial conclusion was we must have happiness genes, because that, what else would be make it true for all people, all cultures at all time, that when they did some altruistic act that they felt happy? So it had to be genetics. So that got me pretty excited, and then I thought to myself, well, if it's genetic and all people do it at all time, why do we have so much violence in the world? Why aren't we happy all the time? So that has a lot to do, of course, with consciousness and unconsciousness, but the conclusion I came to was that we still have our, I might call them caveman instincts, or primitive instincts from survival days, and they're still in us, and they're the things that, like competition, struggle for power, and so forth. Those are the things that are the basis of wars and all the violence in the world. So the question now became, how would it be possible to turn off or decrease the expression of these caveman instincts so that our happiness instincts could reign? And about that time, which was, I guess, a couple years ago or so, the new science of epigenetics was really just blossoming in the field, and people were really determining how the mechanism works and how it actually changes your gene as far as turning it on and turning it off. So then in investigating epigenetics, I found that it fit perfectly with being able to diminish our primitive instincts and increase our spiritual happiness. So that in probably more than you wanted to hear, but that kind of sums it up.
it's a lot there, James. Okay. First of all, now this is fascinating to me. So you said not only happy genes or happiness genes, but you also said spiritual genes.
Yeah, we classify, or at least I classify spiritual as as a belief in a creator and his will of compassion and love that go with
it.
And the reason why I put it all together, because all of those things make you feel happy when you do them. And they never get saturated. They keep, if you do it continuously, you'll get the same positive emotional results. So that has to come from the genes. I can't imagine how else that would occur.
Right.
So that's what I
so
mean by spiritual.
You're saying we're actually, and I tend to agree with you, but that there's the science behind this and the research. In a sense that we're hardwired for this, in a sense, is what I'm hearing.
That's what I think,
yeah. The fabric of our being. So it's in the DNA strand then, or in one part of the strand.
Right.
This happiness gene and spiritual.
Exactly.
Okay.
The genes for happiness are in there.
And how are you able to see this and isolate this and attribute it to happiness?
Well, the thing with the epigenetics is that you can change your genetics for expression without changing your basic
DNA.
Underlying
basic
DNA. Now, of course, you can't change your DNA because that comes through evolution. That's developed for a long period of time, and who knows how far from now that we might become so conscious that we won't have these caveman instincts. I don't know how long that might take, but we may not even be around here by that time at the rate that the world of violence is going. So how can you do that in a short period of time? And then we think the answer is in this epigenetics, that you're sort of like doing genetic engineering by your mind. There are articles in the book which show that you can actually turn off cancer genes. It's been demonstrated and tested. So that's really the sum of it, doing genetic engineering by your own mind. Now, how do you do that? Well, first you got to get in control of your mind. Without that, you can't do anything. And that all has to do with, as I'm sure you know, that our mind is divided into at least two sections of consciousness and unconsciousness, and we're mostly unconscious, and that's the problem. That's really the big problem, is that we're being controlled by ancient instincts rather than our consciousness. And so that sort of a thing, those are all genes, and those have to be turned off. Unfortunately, they have a higher priority. I mean, as I'm sure you know by Maslow's laws or other hereditary laws, that the most important things are survival first, and then everything else comes after it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know what's interesting? I kind of, before I started studying this, learned this by default. I would say probably in the, late... mid 80s or something, early 80s, I had made such changes in my life, just out of my quest, dietary, I was studying some herbology at the time, and what was it, megadoses of supplements. Anyway, I changed things, and I had gone to this art fair, or health fair rather, and there was a wonderful kind of well-known, actually very well-known and well-thought-of iridologist there who had looked at my eyes and was surprised and said, what did you do? And I'm like, well, what do you mean, what did I do? And he said, well, by all accounts, you should be very sickly. And he named how I grew up. He knew everything, you know, dietary stuff, what was going on in my house, the stress factors were there. He could see all that, and he said, but you're not exhibiting any of that. You're very, you know, the other part, the right part, the present mm-hmm. is very, you know, healthy and happy and well-adjusted, and your body's very vital, and, you know, he went on and on and on. And then I started describing what I was doing, and he said, well, you changed your pattern, your health pattern. So I thought, wow, that was amazing. You know, and I wasn't even trying. I didn't know that at the time that you could do that. What I'm hearing you saying, if people know this, that you can actually consciously put a program in essence together for yourself
right.
to make these kind of changes.
Yeah. And in fact, in the book, I mean, what you say is quite true. Environmental changes can change your genetics, and they do, and that's the nurture for it part of our evolutionary process. So environmental toxins will certainly change your health. But what I'm saying is that in addition to that, by your mm-hmm. mind, you can actually, and we demonstrate in the book by a number of several clinical studies that have been done, change your biology. And how do we suggest you do it? As I say, you got to get in control of your mind first. Is there some? There's a 28-day program there for types of methods that will allow you to do that. And then there's
really
a more
extensive
one later on.
You really do need a program, don't you?
I beg your pardon?
You really do need a program.
Oh, you do.
Don't you?
You do.
Focus of.
I agree. Because most people, me included, you know, we're sort of controlled by our unconscious mind because that's the way we were brought up and that's the way we lived. And now we're finding out later on how we can change that, but we got a lifetime of life experiences behind it. So you have to have a technique mm-hmm. for doing it, changing your habits. And mm-hmm. That's what we have in the book. And there's a 28-day program, which is not really too difficult, frankly. It's just a question of repetition so that you understand where you are.
Mm-hmm.
So
and
I think
that... And how important is the repetition?
Yeah.
How important is
what,
repetition?
What is the repetition? Well, like, for instance, I'm sure you're familiar with the living in the moment, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
That's been around for a long time, is that being conscious of where you are right now and what you're doing right now, rather than watching all these thoughts stream by our minds and we're not even here. We don't even know mm-hmm. what we're thinking. And the problem is that all of those thoughts that stream through the mind carry emotions with them. So at the end of the day, mm-hmm. you're tired, you're stressed out, all from nothing, just watching these random thoughts going through the mind. Well, it's been known for a long time that you can slow these down, and they do it in mm-hmm. Buddhism, and they do it in certain types of meditations of all kinds. So that gives them some control over watching, being a watcher of your mind. But now, in connection with that, then you need to tell your mind what you want to do. It's not just a question of slowing it down. You have to give it some direction. And so all of that's in the book.
I love that. It's fascinating. And how you're talking about having the repetition, how important do you feel it is when making changes to have a program that is that there is this repetition within it?
Well, the
you
more
need
the more you do, the more you do, the better off you'll be. Let's
mm-hmm.
take an example. For instance, a lot of Tibetan monk, they do mm-hmm. the meditation every day, all the time, virtually, and they're supposedly in inner peace all the time. But of course, we can't do that. We got a real world we got to live in, and we got to go to work, and we got to do other things that we may not want to do. So we mm-hmm. have to fall short of that. So we have to fit in as much as we can, and it can be done anywhere. You don't have to be on a couch half asleep. You can do it while you're going to work, while you're in the car. Well, probably not while you're driving. Just walking up and down stairs. It can be very short, but at least you're training mm-hmm. your mind. You're telling your subconscious mind that it's not in control. You're in control.
Mm.
And then, of course, that's, go ahead.
Well, Dr. Baird, we have a question from Revel in the chat. What about the fear instinct? Isn't it overdone now? It was more important, as you say, during caveman times to fear a saber tooth, for instance, and for us. Is fear still a necessary emotion? Do you think it's still a necessary emotion?
Spiritual?
Fear. Is fear... No,
oh, fear. Oh, absolutely. Fear is in it, obviously.
But now, the question in the chat was that it was more important as a caveman to have fear. Is fear still a necessary emotion?
It is to a certain extent, but nothing like it was in survival techniques.
Okay.
And therein lies the rub, is we're out of sync. Our environment is out of sync with the environment we had during survival days. Evolution just doesn't move that fast. So our environment moved faster than evolution could compensate and change the genes. So the fear that we had in survival days is still somewhat with us. Is it necessary today? No, it's not. But we have it. So that's part of doing these exercises, epigenetic exercises, to reduce our inherent instinctive fear of things.
So you're using, in doing these epigenetic genetic exercises, then you would begin to perhaps ameliorate the fear, to begin to lessen the fear?
Exactly.
Oh, that's great. Oh, my God, that's
great.
So it begins
The fear all comes from your subconscious mind. And all of your instincts are in there. Primitive instincts are in the subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind doesn't really care anything about reality. All it tries to do is protect you from any threats or any dangers. But these are dangers and threats that don't exist anymore. They exist at the time of primitive times. So the real culprit in here is the subconscious mind. And so what we're really trying to do is get more in control of our own self, our own emotions, because emotions normally follow thought. Whatever you think, an emotion's going to follow it. So if you control what you think, then you'll have the kind of emotions that you prefer to have.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about controlling emotions? If our emotional state becomes better, would that follow also that our thoughts would become perhaps healthier?
I think so. I think it's a chain reaction. One improves, one helps the other.
So whichever way you can come at it...
But
you
controlling
kind of
your emotions, if you control your emotions, you have to do it by thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, unless you clear those lower chronic stuck states. And that brings up a good point. Where does chronic or stuck states of emotion fit in here? And because we had a question before you came on air about depression, that a lot of times people have depression or experience depression because of illness or pain. Is it possible, Dr. Baird, to get out of that loop? Is it possible through your research and your book to get out of that loop?
Because how do you, first, depression, which is a very, very serious illness in our world today, unfortunately. We're in a state of depression.
It's getting worse.
Because Well, we're in there because we're being controlled by our subconscious mind. That's why we're depressed. Mm-hmm. But how do they treat depression? And first thing they do, basically, usually, if it's serious enough, they'll put people on some kind of drugs to get them to a point where they can use their mind. And then when they get on use their mind, the treatment is some sort of a cognitive therapy. That's the preferred method today of treating depression. And cognitive therapy is nothing more than epigenetics. So it all comes back to the same thing. It all comes back to how can you change your biology without waiting around for evolution to do it? You can do it yourself, and you can do it now.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't mean to infer, like, you know, it's a free lunch. It's like you snap your fingers and everything will be fine. This is something you have to work at.
You have to work on. You have to work on it a little bit. Okay, we have a question from Debbie. What can we do to control the subconscious? Which I think you're touching on this, but...
Well, the most important thing is... Now, I have to pass along some credit to somebody who's far more expert at this than I am, and that's the fellow that wrote the book Power of Now. And his name is Toll. And he's a genius in my mind as far as how do you control your subconscious or unconscious, which is supposedly the same thing. But basically... what he says is the way you do that is you have to remain in the now. In other words, you can't be in the past and you can't be in the present, as the past brings the worries of the past and the fear of the future. And the future is all illusion anyway. I'm sure everybody knows, but I know whenever you thought something was going to happen in the future, it almost never did. It came out in another way. So how do you get a hold? You accept what's now. You accept it. You don't fight it. This is now. This is where I am. This is the situation. You don't deny reality. You accept reality. Now, that takes away fear, and it takes away stress. That doesn't mean that you can't do something about it if you don't like it, and you should. Mm-hmm. But at least you won't get angry, you won't fight it, you won't fear it. To say, well, this is the way it is. I accept what it is. However, while I'm accepting what it is, how can I change things so that they'll be more like what I want to do? So, how do you do it? The first step and the most important step is, as they say, live in the moment or be in the now. That was what you're doing right now, this minute, this second, is reality for you. The only time you can ever change anything is in the now. I know it's getting a little deep, but that's
that's my recommendation. That's fine. No, that's our audience, our listener base. Because the unconscious or subconscious is built upon what's happened in the past and presupposes what's going to happen in the present and the future by the past.
Right.
So right there, if you're focused on the past, you could have worry, especially if something happened to you negative or tragedy in the past or a situation wasn't handled well.
Yeah.
So I can see what you're saying, Dr. Baer, just by focusing more in the present, you're opening more to that unlimited possibility, because we don't have to repeat.
Well, that's right.
The past.
Yeah, forget the past, and the future is an illusion. It's just your imagination is what might happen in the future, and it almost never does. So the only thing you can do anything is right now. This is the only time you can take an action. You can make a phone call. You can think of something specific and answer a question. You can make some change is now. You can't do it in the past and you can't do it in the future. So be present. Be present. Be aware of what's around you, what you're doing now. If you're washing the dishes, wash the dishes. Don't be worried about what you're going to do tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have a couple questions. One email question about if I'm accepting something, does that mean it won't change? Oh, I know that's a big fear for a lot of people.
If you're accepting it. If you accept something, it will change if you change it. So in other words, by accepting, say you're in a bad marriage, for instance, and your husband or your spouse acts a certain way. Well, that's the way they are. So by fighting that, you'll have a troubled marriage. You'll never be successful if you want it to be. But if you accept the way they are, you don't agree with it, but if you accept the way they are, at least you won't be feeling stressed. This is the way they are, and I'm not going to worry about it because that's the way they are. Now that I realize that, I can now move to make some changes if I can. I can either get out of the marriage, or I can make some changes maybe to myself to make the marriage better, or I can talk to my spouse. Maybe they don't see it and so forth, but at least you'll be not in a highly stressed, depressed state because you know, all suffering really comes from denying reality. So that would be my response to that.
Okay, that's great. Well, it's interesting. It comes back to that, again, that acceptance of what is. And it sounds like from what you're saying, the resistance to what is also what's bringing the unhappiness.
That's
almost
exactly
like an inner
fight,
saying, I guess.
Right.
Yeah?
Yep.
Okay, we have another question in the chat room. Revel is asking, what about, where does future planning fit in, like of projects? How do you deal with future planning if we're to be in the now?
Well, you plan. There's nothing special you have to do. You plan, but when you do, you should always do some future planning. You know, you want to be, set some goals. You want to be here at a certain time or a certain particular situation. So you plan for it, but that doesn't mean that you can't be in the now. In fact, when you are in the now, that means that you are in consciousness. And when you're in consciousness, that's the time you're creative, and that's the time you should do all your planning. When you're not in the now, you cannot be in the now and be unconscious. If you're not in the now, you are unconscious. And when you're unconscious, you are not in control of your mind, and you can't plan anything realistically.
I love that. That's so true. When you're not in the now, you're not conscious. Yeah, you go in a reverie. You're not here. Yeah, you're not in we're a void. And this reminds me, too, Baird. Is it Baird? Am I saying it right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Reminds me of that, in the Buddhist philosophy, not to be attached. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you can still plan, but maybe not be over-attached to the outcome, the future outcome.
They're saying that all suffering comes from desire or craving. And there's certainly a lot of truth to that. And when you crave, when you want something, you crave something, and you don't get it, then you suffer. It's not the fact that you don't set yourself in a position where you don't ever want to do anything, because that's nonsense. You want to be happy. And the Buddhists basically talk about inner peace. And inner peace and common happiness are quite different. But inner peace and spiritual happiness have much alike. So I think that, the Buddhists are basically a spiritual happiness. They call it inner peace. I call it happiness.
So that's a distinction.
Who knows what is, there is no real definition of happiness or inner peace. It's in the eye of the beholder. It's a very subjective thing.
Now, as what you're speaking of here, Dr. Baird, actually, it definitely flies in the face of convention, because everything that you're espousing is, which I totally agree with you, but it's on a mainstream level, in the level of race consciousness, we're not taught this at all.
That's true.
Yeah.
There is extreme unhappiness in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And all you got to do is look around, and you see it every day in the week or in the newspapers, all the violence that's caused everywhere, at all kinds of levels, and the abuse. And you don't have to look very far before you see that people are not happy. And if you go and do, as we have, happiness polls around the world, and countries do this, and it's been done for a long time, people don't say happiness. They always say satisfied or feeling of well-being. Now,
mm-hmm.
What is a feeling of well-being? I don't know what that is. And what is satisfied? What does that mean? These are not things that you can precisely define at all. And
mm-hmm.
the biggest problem with all of those things, and there's nothing wrong with having pleasures, it's a good meal,
right,
certainly to be enjoyed, but what happens when you eat too much? Then the good
mm-hmm.
meal is not any good anymore, or you have it every night of the week. The problem with external happiness is that it's dependent upon conditions, and conditions always change. That's called the law of impermanence. Nothing
mm-hmm.
remains the same. So those things, and from our standpoint, are not true happiness. We call true to happiness something that's independent of conditions, and it's always there, and it comes from within.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge difference in the types of happiness.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said at the top of the program, you said that bought into the big lie, and I agree. I also call it the rule book or the manual that everyone gets, that
yeah.
at a certain time in their life, you realize it doesn't work.
Right.
So the rule
well, that's
doesn't
true.
Work. This lie, and you said that the money and success will make you happy. And so that is drummed into everyone.
Yeah.
What,
true.
Through your research, what did you find that in polling that actually makes people happy, whether they have money or success, whether they consider themselves successful or affluent or not? What were some of the common denominators of true happiness?
True happiness? You mean
mm-hmm.
internal? Or denominators are somebody that's spirit, I call it spiritual happy or genetic
okay.
happiness. The common denominators is a person who's mostly at peace, a person
mm-hmm.
that it doesn't live for themselves; they live for other people. They're not self-serving. They're always interested in helping somebody else rather than taking care of their own needs all the time. That you shouldn't do some of that, but it's
mm-hmm.
actually a person that lives more spiritually than materialistically.
Mm.
In other words, they're not out to accumulate stuff. It's they're out to accumulate, happiness, but they're out to accumulate making the world a better place to live. And they're more
mm.
conscious. You find a person whose spiritual is more conscious. In other words, they don't get into arguments with people. And there's nothing wrong with stating your position. You have a disagreement with a person, you tell a person, well, this is where I'm coming from, but there's no point in having an argument. That's it. You made your statement, and you don't fight their statement, because once you do that, you go back into the unconscious mode again.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in the unconscious mode, there's no telling what you'll do, because you're not in control of yourself.
Mm-hmm. You're reactive, right?
Well, yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Unconscious can be reactive.
Yeah.
We have another comment in the chat room that it sounds like spiritual happiness goes deeper, and common happiness could be more fleeting.
Well, I think that's
so,
right on.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I think that's right on.
Kind of a natural
happiness is very fleeting.
Mm-hmm.
And what made you happy today will make you sad tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
The pleasure you had today turns into something that's unpleasant tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because it's totally condition dependent.
Mm-hmm.
It seems
in our evolution right now, and there is a subtle movement, underneath the surface, and then also, many people on the fringe are wanting to get more tools like your book, more into the mainstream consciousness, so that there is this tipping point that can be created where people are living more spiritually. Can you comment on that at all? What are your thoughts on that?
I think there's a major trend towards people who really think about this to realize that the world really needs to evolve into more consciousness if it's going to become a better world.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't do that, it's simply going to go the way that it's going now, which doesn't look too enticing, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a general awareness of most all the things I read and see and talk to people about. We're all agreeing on a major trend that we need to have, and that trend is to become more conscious and less self-conscious and less unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the best hope for the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the issue is whether evolution is going to bring that around in time or not, who knows? I mean,
right.
It seems to me like that's let's face it, from the beginning of life, up until now, what we have is a general evolution of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting more conscious from the beginning. I mean, consciousness wasn't even started until like about 10,000 years during the time of the Egyptian dynasties and
mm-hmm.
agricultural. It's relatively new
mm-hmm.
to where we are now. So I think consciousness is what I mean. How is our species evolving, and why is it evolving, and what's it evolving towards? My thought is evolving towards more consciousness to get, I would hope, develops up to a point at some point where we're conscious enough that we can communicate with our Creator.
Mm-hmm. And live that more of that connection. I think, again, I go back to the tool. People need the tools, so in essence, it's like a training or retraining.
Yeah, that's true.
Program, right? Right.
Yeah.
To make this available, this perhaps higher aspect or more divine or the expanded part of the consciousness more readily lived and lived on an everyday level.
I agree.
We have another. This is a good question, Dr. Baird. How does being a people pleaser affect happiness, and does the book address this? That's a good
being
question.
A people pleaser?
Yeah, how does being a people pleaser affect happiness, and does your book address this?
I think it does, and
mm-hmm.
it depends on why you want to please people. If you want to please
mm-hmm.
people to build your own ego, of what you can do with people, how you can manipulate people, that's one thing. If you want to please them just because you love people and you want to make them happy, that's quite another thing.
Mm.
So from an altruistic standpoint, if you're a people pleaser, the connotation is not necessarily plus or minus. It depends on what perspective you're looking at it from.
So it's more the intention then.
Yeah, in other words, if you want to please people because you want to make them happy and feel good, that's a spiritual characteristic. If you want to
mm-hmm.
please them because you want to get something out of them, that's an unconscious characteristic.
Mm-hmm. We go back to the unconscious then.
Oh, yeah. We never get away from
it. Yeah. No, we don't. Now, we have, because I got a couple of websites for you. I've got a couple of people wanting to know the link to the book. It's also
okay,
on
now
the
our website is under construction, but what you could do in the meantime, if you want,
okay,
if you want to communicate with me,
mm-hmm,
just go on happinessgenes.org, O-R-G.
Okay, that's what.
And that'll be a way that they can communicate with me until our website gets up.
Okay. And, yeah, I had a couple questions on that. I guess somebody had gone to it. Okay, happinessgenes.org. Perfect.
Right.
To contact you. Okay. And also to get to the book. But, again, those that are listening via phone or later in the archives, there is a link on the Awakenings Radio segment page that'll take you to Amazon, or you can go to happinessgenes.org.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we get the book. Okay. Now, we have another question. This is kind of interesting from actually someone listening from England, that they said that they've done some study or that they had heard that people in the States, the Americans, are less happy than other countries. Is that true?
I've seen that, and that is true in certain cases. Yeah, the Americans are
okay,
not very high on the list for happiness of all the developed countries. And the basic reason that most people give for that is because we're more materialistic than just about anybody. We spend all of our, most of our time trying to get stuff and build our own position, our own ego up than anything else, and more than most countries. So that's one of the basic reasons why the big difference between happiness is we're basically materialistically oriented, which is cultural rather than being genetically interested spiritually.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that's probably right. Now, if you're talking specifically about Europe, that's quite right. Most of the countries in Europe are happier than we are, according to polls anyway. Again, they call happiness satisfaction and feeling of well-being because they're not as materialistic. They don't work as hard. They don't work as long as we do. And we're always running around at hyper speed trying to get this done and
yeah,
that done, and multitasking. And these things bring depression, and they certainly bring unhappiness, because when they finally get all the stuff they wanted to get, it doesn't satisfy.
Mm-hmm. I remember at one point I lived and studied in England, and one of the house staff, I had my to-do and my talent. I mean, I was, and he's like, just have a lay-in, just relax, just
yeah,
get the paper and have some tea. And you know, I noticed too, Dr. Barr, that people, they take longer lunches. Most people that work indoors, they eat
yeah,
at the parks outside. They chat, they talk. 6 weeks vacation, and you're right, they seem to work less, but they seem to have more.
Yeah.
I don't know what the equation is for that, but they seem to have more. Okay, we're getting to callers. We had a couple of callers on the line. If you want to go back, the number's 347-539-5122. If you have any questions or comments, just press 1 on the keypad, and I know that you can all know that you have a question or a comment. Again, we're talking with Dr. James Baird, author of Happiness Genes, Unlock the Positive Potential Within Your DNA. And again, that call-in number, 347-539-5122. I wanted to let people know this. Now, one thing is, and I don't know, do you, in the program, you said it's a lot with the mind and coming into, it sounds like the more the present moment, being more in the now. Is this program instituted to help unlock these spiritual genes or these happiness genes? Is that part of the program as well, or is it
yeah,
a byproduct?
Part of the program is to turn on the happiness genes and turn off the materialistic
genes. Okay, that's great. And turn off.
Yeah.
Materialistic genes.
See, that's what epigenetic does. It doesn't change. It can't grow new genes. But what it can do is it can turn them off or on.
Mm-hmm.
The genes are still there.
They're still there.
But they
okay.
may not
so
be
in
effective.
A sense, okay. So in essence, it's like making them dormant or perhaps mission
exactly.
in a sense.
Right. Right.
Okay. But using the mind. Well, you were explaining this wonderfully. I've had other guests on speaking of this, and it seemed a little esoteric, but this is very makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know that we can do this.
Oh, it
and
is.
What do you feel?
It is esoteric. It's
yeah.
I guess what
well,
they
it
call
is right
a
now.
New science.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
it's
but
esoteric
it's coming out,
now.
And it's
yeah.
Coming out with a tremendous effort from a lot of sources, a lot of directions.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things I noted in some of your research was that these ancient instincts. You talked about it a little bit at the top of the program. Do you think? Do you feel that, let's say, by doing this program and similar programs, let's say we really start. You know, turning these genes off or making them dormant or putting them in remission, however you want to say it. Is it possible to have these instincts become extinct? Is it possible to evolve to such a level physically, physiologically, that these are no longer needed, no longer necessary, no longer prevalent?
Well, eventually, evolution, the process of evolution is going to do that. But
anyway.
in the meanwhile, can we turn some of the instincts off? Well, that's just what we're talking about here, is just doing just that. By turning off some of the instincts such as, competition or need for power or struggle or need to be a winner or whatever. Yes. It's possible to turn some of those genes off.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that. I mean, you can see how that's done in people who are extremely spiritual. It's not going to be us. I'm talking about monks and meditators and lifetime Buddhists and so forth and so on. They don't have any violence. There's none there.
Yeah.
They don't argue. They don't fear. They're just in love with life.
Mm-hmm. Very accepting. What reminds me too that instead of that competition, there is that movement to move more into synergy instead of self-interest, mutual interest. You know,
yeah.
Which moves
well,
into
the more
coherence.
Conscious, more conscious we become, the more we become like that.
Mm-hmm.
See, all of those instincts that we're talking about, the primitive instincts. They're all in the they're all in the unconscious mind. They're not in the conscious mind. Those are all the tapes in our mind that have been built up from the beginning. Life experiences plus all the instincts that we've inherited. They're all in the unconscious mind. They're not in the conscious mind.
They're all unconscious. Yeah, it is. Well, it's unconscious, and it makes people act unconsciously as well.
Yeah, I know. It's well, you see, they still don't know. They still don't know. They've been studying minds for a long time, and there's been all kinds of philosophers and psychiatrists and psychologists who got their ideas, but they still really don't even know what the mind is. And,
no.
I mean, physiologically or from a mechanistic state. And they're just really beginning. They know it's an activity of the brain. That's about it. But we know by personal experience, because all these things we're talking about, you know they're true because you live it in your life.
Yeah.
We have those experiences. So I think we know how the mind, we don't know how it works from a mechanical state or a biological state, but we know what happens. When you put this in, this happens. just by experience, life.
Mm-hmm. Where are that reflecting consciousness? We're able to reflect back on it, ourselves,
yeah.
or itself.
Uh-huh.
A lot of study to be done with that. And it sounds like the more people are engaging in that way of thinking, that they're naturally going to, well, they're going to be less local, less, you know, little self-focused, that they're
mm-hmm.
naturally going to align or tap in to these happiness genes or spiritual happiness genes.
Well, they are, because they're in there. Our Creator mm-hmm. put them in there. He wants us to use them.
Mm-hmm.
And we do use them. Every time we express, have a spiritual expression, as I said, mentioned before, of showing compassion to somebody, they're being expressed. That's what they're there for.
Mm-hmm. So part of what I'm hearing you say from your study and your research is that really, in order to be really happy, that satisfied, I call it fulfilled, one needs to tap into that spiritual aspect of oneself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And did you find, Dr. Barrett, in your research that any way, I don't know, was perhaps more effective or better, or is it just any way that one is tapping into that, as long as it's fulfilling with them? Is it more individual, I guess, is what I'm asking?
Well, it is. It certainly is individual. I mean, we're not all the same with respect to this, but we're basically the same. It's going to be easier
mm-hmm.
for some than for others, but it's all the same basic process. We are, as I'm sure you know, 99.something% the same genetically, all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're all almost exact duplicates of each other. There's very little that's different between one and the other, except that they have a little different mindset than the other person. And because they've had perhaps some different life experiences, they had some traumatic events when they were young, and they don't like this, they're scared of that, whatever. I mean, it's not their fault. That's the things that their unconscious picked up as it grew over the years. And so we need to turn that off, and you can't do it until you get a hold of your mind. If you can't control your mind, you can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You can't make any changes,
back.
That's for sure. And the way you control your mind, yeah, the way you control it, we've suggested some ways. I mean, they're not the only way, but we've suggested some ways of changing your mind in a way that's practical, that fits in with their everyday workday.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we're about here. It needs to be every day. You need to bring it into everyday living, you know.
Yeah,
that's
right. Bring it into everyday living and make it part of your life. Make it your life.
Mm-hmm. So that, well, then it really keeps going back to the tools, that people have to have the tools.
Yeah,
and,
it does.
Right? You can't, you know, it's
yeah.
difficult. I think it's a good, you know, it's difficult to not to do something like this if you don't have the tools or have some kind
right.
of program or routine, something that you need to do to shift.
True.
And I noticed, yeah, you have the 28 days, which takes to shift a pattern, you know, or get new thought instituted.
Mm-hmm.
And what are some of the things that people have received from doing this some of the feedback? It's another question coming in from email.
You know, the book got launched April 10th,
mm-hmm.
and hasn't been out there that long. And so, to be perfectly honest with you, we really don't have a wealth of feedback at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We have the person that developed the plan got a PhD in psychology and a PhD in hypnosis, so she's more than qualified to develop these kinds of plans.
Mm-hmm.
So we're quite sure that the results are going to be good, but they're going to be totally dependent on a person doing it. We could come up with all the ideas in the world, but unless they're implemented, then they're not going to benefit anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yes, really good point. People, have to do this. You know, you have to. If they don't do the plan or the program and complete it, then it's kind of moot. It doesn't, you know, really doesn't have anything.
Exactly. And that's what are some? Difficult. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, we have another question coming in. What are some of the things that you personally do? We got a lot of. We had one person call in, but then somehow the connection disappeared.
Okay.
A lot of email questions, a lot of chat questions. Yeah.
You got another question or?
Routine. No, that one. Your personal routine.
Okay.
I was just reading.
My personal routine. The first thing that I attempt to do and I try to keep in front of me is to live in the now.
Mm.
In other words, don't resist anything. Accept what is. It is what it is. Now, it's more than it is what it is. You can acknowledge, but you have to acknowledge without resistance, without resisting it. That doesn't mean that you can't change it. It just means that you acknowledge it without resistance now. And then you can work around doing whatever you want to do to change the situation. But that's my primary thing. Now, once I get a control, that allows me to get more control over my mind, more consciousness. And once I do that, then I can start working on these primitive instincts, whatever. In fact, they go away with just doing that. Whereas for arguing, for instance, now... And I've been, frankly, I have to admit, I have not been a very spiritual person all my life. I've studied it from interest, and I do have a great interest in it. But outside of that, when I wasn't in that mood, I have been, frankly, had quite a big ego. And it had to do with running a business and being successful in a business at that point and running people around and so forth. So, I mean, I had a lot to work on, but it's working for me, and I've been happier since I've been doing this than I've ever have been in my life. Not only I have, but my marriage and my family and the whole works. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of family. I got 14 grandchildren.
Oh, that's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot. Debbie is asking or commenting, I try to find the good in everything. These quote-unquote bad times made me more compassionate, understanding, and loving.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that sounds good. I think and part of what I'm hearing is also, more than anything, it's not so much what happens to us, but how are we responding to that.
Right on. Well, that's absolutely right on.
And the way we respond
is just to say, well, that's the way it is. Now, I may not agree, I may not like it, but that's the way it is. I'm not going to fight it. Right now, I'm going to accept it. If somebody yells at me or something, I'm not going to yell back at them, react to them. I might say, well, how can I help you or whatever. But then once you get control of yourself, you're not resisting. Now you have control of yourself. You're in your conscious mind. Now you can make good decisions on what you want to do to change the situation.
Mm.
You can't do that when you're in your unconscious mind.
No. We've got another question. This is actually a good one. What about people that have experienced a lot of trauma? Can this book be of benefit for them? Well, that's a good point.
I certainly, that would be my view. I know I have, and I know it's helped me.
Mm-hmm.
The book is really designed basically for people to get better quality of life. I mean, there are a lot of self-help books out there, and the problem is with most of them, they're not really effective because they don't give people a very practical way of making a change. Some of them require, basically, we operate by habits, and so we need some sort of a technique to help change our negative habits in our subconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
So that part, we can't, you know, we're creatures of habit. And we can't, by willpower, go out and do this and do that and do that if it's not a habit. So the sooner we make it a habit, then it becomes something we do automatically, and then we don't have to work at it anymore. It just happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that brings another question of the will. Like, some people try to make themselves make the changes, or will themselves.
That never works.
No.
Doesn't work. Look at diets. People say diets don't work, and it's not the diet that doesn't work, it's the person who thinks that they're going to change a habit, an eating habit, by their willpower,
mm-hmm.
without actually going through a program to change their habits. Because diets, the problem with diets, that's another genetic problem.
Mm.
In fact, I wrote a book on that, The Mindful Meals Diet.
I know, I was just going to ask you about that book, The Mindful Meal. Because you were saying in that book that you can't will, you know, just precisely what you just said now.
That's why diets don't work.
Mm-hmm. You can't will it. Now,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'll hold the question. The reason diets don't work, go to that.
Well, the reason why people are overweight, a big chunk of them are, is the genetic problem.
Mm-hmm.
In association with modern food engineering, which compounds the problem, but it goes back to the original genes and survival days when we were taught to eat fat because it has more calories in it. We were taught to overeat because we didn't know where the next meal was going to come from. And we were taught to be lazy because you burn too many calories if you're not. So it has a mm-hmm. genetic basis to it. And and you can see what happened. People back in before the 19th century, 20th century actually, had to work. They'd go out and do some kind of manual labor, and they got the exercise. Now with technology, they don't get the exercise, but they're still absorbing the same amount of calories. So anyway, mm-hmm. The reason I bring it up is because that taught me a lot about what genetics does to human behavior, and I just employed that into this spiritual happiness.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's true, because sometimes people, I mean, hormonal or glandular issues, there could be
There are other
gain,
issues,
even.
of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some people just... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, well, it's interesting. I'm wondering, though, if people doing the happiness program, if that can affect, because ostensibly, if you're saying you can, you know, turn off those other genes, the more negative, suppressive, the ancient instinct genes, and bring it, tap more into the spiritual happiness genes, it would seem that you would be able to do that with diet as well, with food, you know, weight issues.
I agree. I absolutely agree.
Yeah, you do.
It's the same. It's the same kind of process.
Interesting. Yeah. Oh, this is wonderful. This is wonderful insight. And what do you? The main thing you want people to know, I guess, in one way about the book, if there was a message or a focus that you'd want people to receive from your book, what would that be?
Well, the focus is that what I call true happiness, maybe people don't know what true is. Who knows what that word means? But for a more enduring, joyous kind of happiness should come from your spiritual expressions. And that's really it. And to allow that to happen, we need to work on some programs to turn off or suppress the instincts that we have that would block spiritual expression.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by spiritual expression, that doesn't mean you have to go around sitting in church all the time. In fact, frankly, religion doesn't have much to do with it. It's a genetic thing. And so we're endowed with the genes to make us happy. God so loved us that he gave us happiness genes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and do you find from your research that some people have perhaps more of these happiness genes and some less? Is that possible?
Well, that's a question I can't answer.
Okay.
Let's just say that we all have enough.
Okay. We all have enough. Okay. Well, yeah. Doesn't it seem like it could be that some people are blessed with, you know.
Well, there's no question that it has something, happiness has something to do with hereditary instincts. Now, that kind of, you see people go around smiling all the time. Some mm-hmm. do, some don't. And a lot of it has mm-hmm. to do with hereditary instincts. That doesn't mm-hmm. mean that the person, because they're smiling, is joyous as a person who's not smiling is, but it gives an indication that they're enjoying themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a genetic thing, too. Smiling is genetic. It's around the world, everybody smiles in the same way, uses the same muscles and so forth and so on. That's just a reaction from thoughts.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting as you're sharing this, I'm thinking of that saying, fake it till you make it. So even if someone had less, let's say, of those genes or a predisposition to, you know, maybe be more, I don't know, sourpuss, you know, more frumpy,
yeah.
Through this, you know, epigenetic focus, if you will, that you mm-hmm. could begin to shift that. That there is a possibility to turn that around.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's been well demonstrated that people who are optimistic live healthier, longer, more happy lives
mm-hmm.
on numerous types of surveys. So fake it till you make it, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean
you
shouldn't try and you can fake it, but should also obviously try and do something that can implement it.
Yeah.
By faking it, in other words, pretend.
Still do something.
Pretend that you are is a step in the right direction.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, I would even imagine. I'm just, you know, we're speaking of your book, so I'm going to use that as an example. But let's say someone that, you know. Most of their family has certain characteristics, you know, maybe, you know, always the glass is half empty.
Right.
But that person could very well say, that's ingrained in me, but I'm going to try something else, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm going to, you know, and so from that instant until, because in a way, taking the program is a bit of faking till you make it, till the change starts happening. So just
mm-hmm.
suspending that disbelief, you know, I think that's really could be powerful for people.
I agree. Absolutely.
Very exciting. And I love it, too, because it's very freeing that it's, you know, that our genes, yeah, there's a mutability to them, and they're not controlling us. For so long, there was such a focus that you are your genes. You know,
mm-hmm.
you are this inherited blueprint. And in essence, what you're saying here and through your research and, you know, the Genome Project and other research that was done is that there is a malleability. There is that unlimited potential that if you put your mind to it and you have the right tools or techniques, you can really make those changes that you want to make.
That's true.
And I think that's... I think that's something worth sharing and talking about. Well, Dr. Baird, this has been wonderful having you on the program. Our time is winding out here. I just really appreciate you being on the program today.
Sure, my pleasure.
And
I
again,
just hope that I hope it helps somebody. That's the important thing.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. We've had some great questions coming in, and I think you've given some great information. And also, what I really love is that you made this so understandable. You really put it in some layman's terms, very simple terms that people can get and really connect the dots, that doing something like this, there is a link, there is a direct link into changing those thoughts. There is a direct link to how someone is going to feel.
Right.
And that's that's really important. So again, if anyone would like to contact Dr. James Baird or look at the book, Happiness Genes, Unlock the Positive Potential Within Your DNA, you can go to happinessgenes.org. Right? That's right?
Right. Uh-huh.
Perfect. All right, Dr. Baird, have a wonderful day, and thank you so much for taking time out to be on Awakenings.
Well, thank you. Really enjoyed the conversation.
I did as well. And you have an open invite to come back anytime you'd
All
like.
Right, thanks
thank
a
you.
Lot. Bye.
Bye. And that was Dr. James Baird. The book is Happiness Genes, Unlock the Positive Potential Within Your DNA. Wow, not only a happy book, but a very hopeful book. I like that because it really focuses on empowerment, empowering the individual. And, you know, we just know this, that consciousness is all there is. So when you're aligning to more consciousness and you're living in that present moment, anything is possible. Thank you, Awakened listeners, for tuning in, all the guests that were listening today as well. And thank you all that will be listening later via iTunes and the archive. It's great to connect with all of you, as always. And again, for our non-competitive competition, how and where you listen to Awakenings, you can email me at awakenings@selfandlight.com. I'm going to put that in the chat as well. And also on the Facebook page, Awakenings Radio, and we have a nice little gift for everyone that does this. And again, that's how and where are you listening to Awakenings? I want to know, and I also want to share it with all the rest of the listener participants. So as always, wonderful to be here and continue to share your insight, shine your light, and keep awake. And let's end with a little happiness by DJ Petey from moontribe.org.